proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm Aaron Broughton, your host for today, and I want to thank you for tuning in. Over the past few programs, we've been looking at Bible geography by taking a land tour of Israel by visiting special places both past and present. Last time, we visited the surrounding mountains around Jerusalem. Just to review, this is the Mount of Olives, Mount Scopus, Mount Zion, Mount Moriah, and of course, Mount Calvary. Today, we will now go toward the old city of Jerusalem. The modern city of Jerusalem sprawls over several hills and really is divided into two major areas, the old city and then modern, or what is really called New Jerusalem. But no, this isn't the New Jerusalem that we read of in the book of Revelation, but it refers to the modern section of Jerusalem that we will cover in a future broadcast. Let's begin our tour of the old city at Jaffa Gate, which is on the western side of the city walls. Now, the walls that you see here in front of you are only about 500 years old, and were built by Ottoman Suleiman the Magnificent. So keep in mind that the walls that you see here are not exactly like the city layout during the time of Jesus. Now then, Jaffa Gate is named so because it gives entrance from the Jaffa Road that begins by the Mediterranean Sea near Tel Aviv, Jaffa today. Now the road that stretches between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem today is Highway 1, and that's the same exact road that would have been used even back during the times of Jesus. Jaffa Gate has recorded many interesting stories over the years. During the Ottoman rule, the German Kaiser Wilhelm II came through this gate on an official visit in 1898. The Ottoman Sultan ordered that the moat be filled in and part of the wall be open so he did not have to get out of his carriage. That is why you see a gap in the wall here today. During the British Mandate in 1917, General Edmund Allenby also came through this gate, but in a very different way than that of the Kaiser. Upon coming to the gate, he dismounted from his horse and walked on foot along with his officers into the old city in order to show respect for this special place, the city of the king. One interesting story about these walls from Suleiman's concerns is its architects. Legend has it that Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent ordered that these men were killed after he found out that they forgot to enclose Mount Zion and David's tomb when the walls were erected. He then had them buried just inside the Jaffa Gate. You can see these grave markers even today when you visit. In fact, if you just walk through the gate, see it there on the left, and there they are. One exciting tour you can take from this spot is to walk the ramparts of the wall. You can begin here at Jaffa Gate and eventually end up on the eastern side at Lion's Gate or St. Stephen's Gate. Another route you can take begins at the south side near Dung Gate, ending at David's Citadel near Jaffa Gate. It's quite a hike, so bring good walking shoes. But from here, you'll get to see a very unique view of the old city, literally walking on the rooftops of people who live here today. Now, speaking of the Tower of David or David's Citadel, this is located just inside the Jaffa Gate as you turn to the right. It is an impressive structure from its towers and provides an amazing 360-degree view of the old city. The Tower of David really has nothing to do with King David himself, but rather it was built by the Hasmoneans and then even more so by Herod the Great in constructing three towers. Only one named Faziel still stands today. Inside this fortress is a museum explaining the incredible history of Jerusalem. It is called the Tower of David because of the Byzantine Christians who believed it was King David's palace. They borrowed the name Tower of David from the Song of Solomon, King David's son, who wrote, "Thy neck is like a Tower of David, builded for an armory, whereon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men." That's from Song of Solomon 4, verse 4. Truly, the Jaffa Gate in the old city of Jerusalem gives us a unique view into the mystery of this special place. It is definitely a favorite of mine, as well as for many other visitors who come here to the Holy Land. From ancient history to the current people and even future events, there is something to learn and appreciate here at every turn. Now I invite you to join us next time as we continue our journey in studying the old gates of the city of Jerusalem in our tour of Bible geography in the land of Israel. The next stop on our journey is Zion Gate. Come along with us and invite a friend as well. Also, I just wanted to mention that IBJM is hosting a very special Bible study tour to the land of Israel this coming March. I invite you to come and join us, and I definitely believe that you'll be blessed upon your journey to the Holy Land. In fact, I even want to point out there that it'd be good to invite your pastor, pastor and his wife, to come along with us. I think that'd be a great opportunity for them and really for your church as a whole. Just contact us here for more information about that. Now, with this in mind, let's open our Bibles and our hearts as we study together with our teacher and Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman.
Welcome back to our radio program. With this session, we begin a study of the New Testament books. Over the next few sessions, our survey will examine the era during which the New Testament books appeared. The chronology of the New Testament covered a period extending over several decades. It contained four historical books, the four Gospels, and the historical book of Acts. It also included 21 epistles, that is, letters addressed to churches and to individuals. The New Testament concluded with one prophetic book, the book of Revelation. New Testament authors possessed a wide variety of backgrounds. Some of them, such as Peter, James, and John, earned their livelihoods as fishermen. Matthew collected taxes for the Romans. Luke had medical training. Paul received an extensive education in Judaism. James and Jude were half-brothers to Jesus Christ, being children of Mary. Apart from Paul, Peter, Luke, and John, no individual penned more than a single New Testament book. Paul authored most of the epistles, including possibly the book of Hebrews. Matthew and John were eyewitnesses to many of the events that they described in their Gospels. Mark might have received his information from Peter, who served as a primary source of information about Jesus Christ. Luke compiled his gospel using a number of different sources. The primary events contained in the New Testament historical sections took place in Israel and the surrounding areas. However, a significant portion of the book of Acts occurred in Asia Minor and in Europe. Understanding the rise and growth of the Christian faith involved comprehending the political, social, and economic settings in Israel underlying the New Testament narratives. Greco-Roman cultural norms, for instance, became associated with and promoted by the ruling class in Israel. Such individuals held sway over influential segments of the wealthier parts of the Jewish population. In Israel, values such as those came into conflict with Jewish beliefs and traditions. In the 4th century BC, Alexander the Great conquered the entire Mediterranean world. After his death, four of his generals appropriated various sections of Alexander's domains. Two of these generals were named Antiochus and Ptolemy. Antiochus occupied that area known as Syria. Ptolemy reigned over that country known as Egypt. For hundreds of years, Antiochus and Ptolemy and their descendants waged war. The land of Israel was located between those two powers and often served as a battleground for the opposing forces. During the New Testament era, though, Rome controlled the Middle East. The Roman Empire tried to accomplish four primary goals. The rulers wanted to unify the Mediterranean world, enable safe and easy communication over the expanse of their empire, use Latin as a universal language, and maintain and spread the Roman peace, known as the Pax Romana. The emperor exercised sovereignty as the supreme authority in the Roman Empire. He often appointed governors or procurators to administer the affairs of substantial portions of his domains. The birth of Jesus Christ occurred during the reign of the emperor Caesar Augustus, who ruled from B.C. 30 unto A.D. 14. Augustus was the grandnephew and adopted heir of Julius Caesar. Like Alexander the Great, Augustus was a military-minded conqueror, able to unite large amounts of political entities while pacifying strife throughout his dominions. He became the first Roman ruler to adopt the title of emperor after defeating the forces of Mark Antony in a Roman civil war. In the second chapter of Luke, the author described how Augustus Caesar's tax, or tribute, brought Joseph and Mary back to Bethlehem, in fulfillment of the prophecy in the fifth chapter of Micah. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ took place during the time when Tiberius, the adopted son and successor of Augustus, reigned as Caesar. The image of Tiberius might have decorated the coin that Jesus Christ held when he asked his adversaries, quote, "Whose is this image and superscription?" Unquote. Claudius, the nephew of Tiberius, ruled in Rome in the early days of Christianity. The book of Acts records that he expelled the Jews from Rome. The empire experienced a great famine during the administration of Claudius. When Paul said, quote, "I appeal to Caesar," unquote, he referred specifically to Nero. Nero was a degenerate ruler who, among his other crimes, had his own mother put to death. He actively persecuted Christians, blaming them for the great fire that swept Rome in AD 64. Nero exercised sovereignty over the Roman Empire when Peter instructed Christians in his first epistle, when Peter instructed Christians to, quote, "honor the king," unquote. Nevertheless, Christians did struggle with the compulsory loyalty statement of Rome, namely, acknowledging that Caesar was Lord. While not wanting to appear disloyal to Rome, believers refused to ascribe the title Lord to anyone but Jesus Christ. This caused some Romans to perceive Christians as enemies of their country. Kings held the position of the most powerful territorial rulers of the Roman Empire. However, many of them served as client monarchs, subject to the pleasure of the central authority at Rome. In theory, the Roman Senate selected vassal kings. Many of these functionaries, such as Herod the Great, actually gained their positions through their connection with the reigning Roman emperor at that time. During the New Testament era, the Herodian rulers governed portions of Israel. That dynasty began with Herod the Great in B.C. 37. It ended with the death of Herod Agrippa II in A.D. 70. The Herodian line descended from a noble family of Edomites who had converted to Judaism in the previous century. As mentioned above, Herod the Great became the most notorious of the Roman vassal kings. Appointed by Augustus Caesar as the king of Judea, Herod the Great governed the Jewish people on behalf of Rome. Among his most infamous deeds was ordering the death of all children in the vicinity of Bethlehem who were younger than 2 years of age. This event was recorded in the second chapter of Matthew's Gospel. Herod Agrippa, a grandson of Herod the Great, reigned over Judea and Samaria. He owed his throne to the close fellowship and relationships he had with the emperors Caligula and Claudius. Herod Agrippa had James killed and wanted to execute Peter as well. After his subjects acclaimed him as a god, though, Herod Agrippa, in the words of Acts, quote, "was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost," unquote. Eventually, Rome chose to address their puppet rulers as, quote, "tetrarchs," unquote, rather than as, quote, "kings," unquote. They didn't want to overstate the limited authority of those local leaders. Tetrarchs, unlike kings, exercised sovereignty over limited portions of territory. When a monarch left several surviving heirs, the Roman emperor sometimes divided the late ruler's territory among them. For example, when Herod the Great died, Augustus divided Herod's dominions about his three surviving sons. The oldest of the heirs, Archelaus, was given Judea and Samaria. After several years, though, Augustus replaced Archelaus with a Roman governor. Herod Antipas, a son of Herod the Great, was appointed as tetrarch over Galilee and Perea. He was the Herod who had John the Baptist beheaded. But not long after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, Herod Antipas offended the emperor Caligula, who both deposed and exiled him. Yet another of Herod's surviving sons, Herod Philip, was the man whom Herod Antipas had taken his wife away from. With this, we conclude the first segment of our study about the times of the New Testament. Thank you very much for listening. We invite you to come back for future programs about the New Testament times and the books of the New Testament.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343. or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.